Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is brought to you today by PetMate Plastic Dog Crates, trusted providers of safety and comfort for your dog. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I have with me a returning guest that you guys will remember. This is Jen Amundson from Dog Savvy Lawyer, and we're going to talk about a pretty hot button topic right now, and that is when somehow a dog that you have bred or owned winds up accidentally by some horrible situation in a shelter or a rescue, and you can't get it back. Right, Jen?
That is a problem, and we're seeing it, you know, not every day, but it's not uncommon, unfortunately.
So, I mean, this is prompted by a situation that many of us have probably seen about a Vizsla in Texas. I have my own personal story and dates back before this became quite so common of a dog that I co-owned. That variety series of bad situations, wound up in a shelter, got pulled by a rescue. I found out about it. I said, oh my God, thank you so much. This person's on the way to get the dog. Here's my huge donation to your organization. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And she said, oh no, you can't have her back. Excuse me? So talk to us.
Right. And that is a good illustration because that's a situation where you actually co-owned the dog.
Yeah.
The situation, as I've heard it explained, admittedly through Facebook, though it may not be 100% factually correct, but with the Vizsla, is that the owner passed away.
Right.
The breeder had a contract that said the dog is supposed to go back to the breeder, presumably if the owner couldn't keep it anymore. I don't know if the specific instance of death was covered, but someone didn't honor the contract. They shipped the dog off to the shelter, and now we are where we are, which was the shelter had the dog and wouldn't give it back.
But this happens. I mean, it happens in various, there's all kinds of stories. Pick a story from the Sheltie to the Cockers to you name it.
Right.
Breeders, purebred dog owners, all pet owners, frankly, are feeling, whether it's realistic, but we can say feeling, more under attack all the time.
Right. And the only reason that I bring up the distinction is that in this case with the Vizsla, you know, according to my understanding, the breeder didn't actually own the dog. And so the shelter is under no obligation to honor the contract. Now, I'm not saying they shouldn't. I'm not saying that that wouldn't be the right, the humane, the moral thing to do. What I'm saying is that from a legal perspective, it's very difficult to enforce your contract with the owner against a third party.
Okay.
So that adds a wrinkle to that situation.
There's a whole big difference, right? We know this in the world today. There's a whole big difference between legal and morally and ethically correct.
Absolutely. And what we have are shelters that are, for whatever reason, acting in what they think is their own interest. You know, they can advertise a purebred dog on their website. They can get big bucks in a, quote, adoption, unquote, fee, whatever it is, or it's, you know, good publicity, whatever. But unfortunately, when you have a contract with an owner as a breeder, it's going to be really hard to enforce that against the shelter, a third party that's not a party to your contract. And if you're going to enforce it against the owner or the estate of the owner who's now passed away, you're not going to get the dog back that way because they've already given up ownership of the dog.
Right. So let's talk about, we'll step away from any specific situation. Let's say a dog you bred, you do not co-own, you microchipped it. The microchip shows that you bred it, that you have connection to this dog. What is your legal recourse should you find yourself in this situation?
Frankly, very little. If the shelter has not actually stolen the dog, now we've seen situations where that isn't arguably the thing that's happened, right? Someone's dog was briefly astray, owner tried to reclaim it immediately, right? But if you don't own the dog, then you don't have a lot of recourse there vis-a-vis a shelter. You know, they should be doing the right thing because a shelter, right, they exist to fill a need.
Right.
So if there's no need for the dog to be in the shelter, i.e. if the breeder says, I will take responsibility for this dog, the shelter ought to be giving it back. in my opinion. Now, I understand, right, I'm a Wisconsin lawyer. I understand some states may have rules that say any dog that enters our shelter system shall not leave the shelter system without being neutered. So if that's a law, then the shelter would have to presumably neuter the dog before returning it.
And this is legislation that's just passed in a variety of areas in the country.
I would think that is a pretty new thing, right? And it obviously is all intended to flow into the animal rights agenda.
Unfortunately, I'm afraid that's true. I do believe, and we've talked about this before with various people, I believe that many folks come from a place of goodwill, right? Like they believe they're doing the right thing. And
sure.
I get that. And I'm willing to grant that. Okay. But
probably not the people pushing the legislation.
Right. Well, you know, maybe even them. Okay. Because they think,
well, some of
right,
them.
You know, they don't necessarily have all the facts. They don't have all the information. They're acting on emotion rather than fact and science. And I believe that those are people who genuinely, at some level, that level, those are people who genuinely believe they're doing the right thing. I believe there's a hierarchy. I mean, we can go talk about, we can have a whole session on the various acronymed organizations that would like for all of us to not own an animal. But in this particular instance, focus specifically on an animal that I am involved with is in a rescue or a shelter program, and I'm attempting to get it back legally, and they're fighting with me legally. What are my legal recourses?
Right. So, I mean, you can't go legally to the shelter and just take your dog. So if you do not own the dog, then you really have very little that you can do legally. You know, as a practical matter, contact the shelter, try to have a reasonable conversation with them. If you, as a member of your community, are acquainted with, say, the director of the shelter or someone on the board, I would be calling that person. If you know of a local rescue that you have a good relationship with, maybe you can try to get the rescue to pull the dog and give it back to you. But really, I think there is very little, if you don't have an ownership interest in the dog, that you can demonstrate other than, you know, your contract. I think you're not in a good place because your contract with the owner is not enforceable against the shelter. So
right.
If you now sue, if you want to sue on your contract, now you have to sue the estate of the person who you sold the dog to.
Right.
And that estate no longer has the dog. So probably what you're going to get is a judgment saying they owe you whatever the value of the dog is.
And not the dog itself.
You know, a few hundred bucks maybe, and not the dog itself.
Right.
It's very difficult in our system to recover property. I think it's more difficult to recover property than money.
Right. And in my situation, I actually owned that. I was the registered owner of the dog. And the rescue just said, yeah, too bad, sister. I'm like, really?
So in that situation, you do have some legal recourse.
Okay, what's that?
But the problem is legal recourse takes time and it takes money.
Yes.
You know, what you really would have had to do, probably, and I don't know where this took place, but probably
California.
Have to hire an attorney in that jurisdiction to probably sue the shelter and probably file a request for a temporary injunction to stop them from neutering it, from selling it, you know, further, from doing whatever they would do with it next until the case is resolved. And then you'd have to be prepared to prove your ownership.
Which costs a lot of money, takes a lot of time.
Exactly. That is the thing, right, is it costs a lot of money. Now, the poor woman with that Sheltie, I think that was Ohio. I would have to imagine that cost her tens of thousands of dollars to get that dog back.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely reprehensible.
And it took how many years? I mean, it took a long time.
Right. And there was just a situation with a retired working dog. Might also have been in Texas where a shelter kept the dog. I'm not sure how it came into possession of the shelter, if it had got out of the yard or whatever. Shelter had the dog, refused to give it back to the officer, law enforcement officer who had this retired dog.
Right.
And I think, you know, they said the animal was not being well cared for. Their evidence was he was overweight. And it sounds like he was more overweight when the person ultimately got him back than he was in the first instance. And honestly, how many pet dogs are overweight?
Most of them.
Yeah. I mean, this is not something that we necessarily consider neglect.
If overweight is dog abuse, we're in big trouble, people.
Exactly. So there really is a lot of overreach. And so, you know, unfortunately, like in your case, you were a co-owner, should have absolutely gotten that dog back.
Of course I should have.
But it would have cost you a lot of time, energy, and money.
Yep. And I'm going to own it. At that particular point in my life, I didn't have any of those things. And that's true for most of us. I mean, I'm just like a regular person here, right? I don't have $1 billion to spend on this.
And most of us don't.
Right. Exactly. So we all do like everything we can possibly, the very best thing we can do. I have taken as a result of that, I microchip all of my dogs, all of my puppies that are placed are microchipped to me. End of conversation.
Right.
Because that was their argument at the time, that it did not have permanent identification. This is many, many years ago before this was a normal thing.
Right. I mean, now we've had one litter so far, but we microchipped the puppies before they left.
Yep.
And people were astounded that we were doing this at such a young age. And I'm like, well, why wouldn't we? You know, it just seems like the thing to do.
Well, back in the day, I did not microchip puppies before they left. I assumed that was something the owners would do and that they would register it to them and all of those things. And I lived and I learned.
But I think microchipping was less common.
Oh, much less
back
common.
Then. It just wasn't a thing that people regularly did necessarily.
No.
Now it's more available. So.
It's more available and it's more we've all learned.
Right.
And so I think what I want for this episode and for this conversation is for people to know what can happen and what we can do, all of the things we can try. And so what are some solutions? What are some preventatives, right? You know, you don't want your dog to disappear into the morass of the shelter system. And honestly, I don't think it's mostly the shelters. I think it's independent rescue groups. At least that's been my experience.
Well, that can be too.
Right. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. Heads up, crew. Join our patrons today. Get immediate access to the support of a closed Facebook chat group, special patrons-only episodes, free mentoring sessions, and more. Just like the NPR of dogdom, Pure Dog Talk brings you the news, the knowledge, and the insight to succeed with your purebred dog. In exchange, our Pure Dog patrons share the love with monthly or annual gifts. And that helps defray the cost of overhead and sort of keeping the MP3s rolling, you know? Hit me up, laura@puredogtalk.com, and I'll hook you up with the details. I don't know this one Vishla situation may be a shelter, but in my personal instance, it was a rescue organization, an independent rescue organization, and most of the ones I know of, that has been the case, more than the actual government-organized shelter.
Right. Well, so if we want to talk about prevention... I think that's a great point because that is really, you can't prevent 100% of incidents from happening, but you can take a lot of common sense steps that can help.
Right.
That might prevent these, and that's what we can do. So I think your point about microchipping is fantastic. You know, as I said, that's what we did with the litter that we've bred so far. I would anticipate we'll continue doing that. While I registered all the microchips to me, I did allow the new owners to change them, but I only ever got one notification of anyone doing that. So I believe the rest of the puppies are still registered to us, which is probably ultimately what we would prefer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the first purebred dogs that I bought, the microchip was registered to the previous owner. It was an adult dog, and I never did change it. I always went, oh, my God, if the microchip company ever calls her, I'm going to really have some explaining to do, like that, you know, how did I let her dog get loose?
Right,
but we left it that way and it worked out well. And you hope to never have to use that. But at least it's more evidence of your right to get the dog.
Correct.
Another thing we could talk about is co-owning dogs.
Right.
Now, you and I talked a little bit about that offline. And one issue is, you know, John Q. Public, as in your words, does not want to be micromanaged.
Right.
You know, we already have an issue, like a PR issue, with purebred dogs, getting people to buy our dogs rather than the doodle that they can buy online with a credit card or, you know, a cute little teacup, whatever it is, that they can buy online with a credit card.
Right.
So it's a question of how willing are people to go along with that and how much of a turnoff it's going to be for John Q. Public. And then there are some other issues with it as far as, and I can't quote all the specific laws, so I'm sorry for that. But in some cases, there are rules about at what point, how many dogs you have to own or co-own
right.
in order to trigger regulations.
Right. And that varies. It varies by state.
Exactly.
AKC has some regulations about that. So that has to come into it. So, you know, if you have 10 litters of puppies on the ground at 10 puppies per and you co-own every single one of them, you own 100 dogs
right.
by any government regulation.
Yes, whatever jurisdiction you live in, because mm-hmm. you say AKC rules can come into it and things like that,
mm-hmm.
100 co-owned dogs, that's probably going to trigger some regulation.
It sure enough is.
So you have to think about that.
Right. So, you know, our legal recourse is legitimately pretty limited. So is there anything that we can do contractually? Is there anything that as an attorney you can say, okay, this is the fail-safe, or is there just simply no fail-safe?
Well, it sounds as though the breeder in the Texas situation had a contract
mm-hmm.
that was not honored.
Right. By the estate. Can you add a clause? Can you do anything like that?
So you could add a clause to your contract that says the owner must take steps to include in his or her will or living trust, whatever document they have transferring personal property, to transfer the dog to you upon death.
To the breeder. Okay, that's good. I like that.
Right, to the breeder.
Mm-hmm.
I like that too. It does add more to our contract. So mm-hmm. see my previous comment about John Q. Public.
Right.
You know, most of my puppy buyers, again, I've bred one litter, but most of my puppy buyers, I don't know that they really read the contract. I had one person that asked me to change something, and it was a reasonable request, so we did it. But I would encourage you, if you do something like that, to socialize that with your puppy buyers.
Right.
Talk them through your contract. And this is a concept that's kind of been evolving in my brain for several years. But a contract, it is important, and you do it for a reason. But it's also only as good as the party's understanding of it, unless you want to spend a lot of money to enforce it.
Yep, so important.
So I would socialize that with your puppy people if you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of, you know, if it's you will nominate me in your will
mm-hmm.
as the new owner of this puppy,
mm-hmm.
encourage them to socialize that with their family and friends. Because one thing
right.
I see repeatedly on Facebook, I just saw another situation where the post said, our neighbors were killed in a motorcycle accident this morning.
Mm.
We have to place their two golden retrievers.
Mm.
This was the neighbor.
Jeez, right, right. Why is the neighbor doing this?
And I understand the issue with dogs is you can't leave them in a house for a few weeks like a couch.
Right.
When the owner dies.
Right, right, right.
You know,
right.
They need immediate care and attention. And if the person who's nominated as the executor of the estate lives far away, can't get there immediately, you know, someone is going to have to do this
mm-hmm.
in the interim. But that is something that you can at least attempt to plan for.
Right.
So someone I know on a Facebook post about this, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of the person who suggested it, said have a read if dead binder in your house.
Right. In case of emergency.
No, I said it needs to be read if dead or incapacitated because we know it's not just death.
Right.
So you have to plan for incapacity too.
Right.
And I think we talked about some of that on an early episode of Pure Dog Talk.
We did. And Deborah Hamilton has, I know you've talked to her about this, a really
right.
good, what
right.
she calls her map plan. And I'm going to link in the notes so you guys can go back and click on that.
Yep.
But I think to me, that's a huge piece. And it was after I spoke with Deborah on that particular podcast, I now have an in case of emergency folder. And like most
right.
dog people, you know, pet people usually only have a dog, right? Like we have 10.
Right.
So
exactly.
there's special dispensation for each dog, right?
And they change.
And right. they change.
And they change.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's not only important to do those formal pieces like Deborah encourages in
mm-hmm.
her map plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really good, the map plan, because everybody may not have access to their local attorney who has a lot of experience with these issues.
Right.
So the whole point of Deborah's map plan is to help you put a plan in place, get a plan you're comfortable with, and then walk your attorney through it if you can't find someone who has those, you know,
resources.
That type of experience.
Right.
I have someone here that I work with locally that has that type of experience and is really
mm-hmm.
good,
mm-hmm.
but not everybody has that. So I would encourage people to do something like that.
How about, I'm just now thinking about this. I mean, this is coming into my mind as we're talking. What if every single puppy goes with not just your insurance, you know, suggestion and your microchip information, but a copy of that map plan and say, please make this for your dog?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be great, right? To give people the tools,
mm-hmm.
and then that helps them. Because if you're right. already talking to them about put this in your estate plan,
right?
They might leave and go, yeah, I'm happy to do it, but how do I even go about that?
Right. So make sure they have
like
that
tool. Would be great.
I love that.
Right.
That's great.
I would say over and above, you know, having that map plan in place with your puppy people, socialize them to this idea of in case of emergency.
Right.
And then have your own in case of emergency binder.
Right.
But also socialize this with the people around you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talk to your neighbors. Are they going to mm-hmm. be first on scene? Like,
mm-hmm.
is the sheriff going to be knocking on their door to see if they have a key to your house if you're dead on the road somewhere?
Right.
They might.
Right.
So talk to these people and go, look, I have a plan for these dogs. They do not have to end up in a shelter, and I don't want them to end up in a shelter.
Yes.
Because I really think, given the limited recourse that you have, the cost, the time that it would take to try and sue to get your dog back from a shelter, it's much more beneficial to do what you can on the front end.
Excellent. That is very, very good. And I think that all of the things that we can do and offer to our family of puppy people is valuable. And say you've got dogs out there, there's no saying right now, you've got an email for every single one of them. Ship them an email and say, hey guys, this has just kind of come into the forefront of my thinking. Just wanted to share this with you. Here's some things, here's some tools for you to right. use in the future. And again, to me, this all comes back to full circle. Why are purebred dogs from preservation breeders better? Because we have this resource. We have this information. We can help you. This is part of the 24/7, 365, 15-year tech right. support you get when you purchase this mm-hmm. dog.
Right. Because I don't think, for the most part, I mean, you know, people that buy our puppies do not want their dog to end up in a shelter.
Right.
But
right.
people also don't want their kids to end up in foster care. And I'll tell you, sometimes that is the only way to get people to make a will.
Yeah.
In Wisconsin, the only place you can nominate a guardian for your minor children is in a will.
Wow.
And so often that is when people, when I used to do estate planning, would come into my office
mm-hmm.
when they would realize, oh, we really have to do this.
Right.
So, you know, because maybe you don't want the kids going to your sister.
Right.
Right.
Right. If none of us want to talk about, you know, what happens if I pull out of the driveway and get clocked by a log truck, right? Nobody wants to talk about that.
No, we don't. But I'll tell you, you know, when I did litigation, the case wraps up, whether you win or lose, people shake your hand and go, thanks for your help. I hope I never have to see you again.
Right.
No offense. You know, because they didn't want to be there, right?
Right.
Whether they were the plaintiff or the defendant, something had gone wrong. When estate planning clients come in and sign their estate planning documents, they shake your hand in the end and they go, thank you so much. I really have peace of mind. I've been meaning to do this for so long, and I feel so glad that it's done.
Right, right.
Because even though we don't want to talk about it, it really does give us tremendous peace of mind knowing that we have done something that is going to make our family's life easier in that case. And, you know, in the case of the people we're talking to today,
right.
try to ensure, at least do the maximum possible that you can to be sure your dogs end up where you want them to go.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Jen, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time on a Sunday morning when we're both a little overwhelmed. So thank you.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
All right, crew. Here's Petmate's tip of the week. Literally, what do? Travel with our dogs. Fact. So keep them safe. Keep them safe from accidents. And keep your driving safe from distractions by putting them in a dog crate. Petmate's plastic kennels are a safe and secure home for your dog. Check out special savings just for you at www.puredogtalk.com/partners and use promo code PUREDOG, PUREDOG. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our Dog Show Superintendents are the hardworking people who make the Dog Show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the Super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.